I would probably go microphone most important, then camera. Well, it depends. If you don't have any camera, then there's no point getting lighting, is there?
It's true. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. We have a lot of news to talk about this week. First of all, we have Epic Games purchasing Fall Guys, which is pretty cool. Some new features on Twitch in terms of some updates added to the platform, as well as some maybe not so good updates that they're adding to the subscription side. We have some really cool viewership records still being broken by Twitch, even this year. New features on the YouTube side too, so not just Twitch this week, but talking about some new cool features for the studio side of YouTube. Some new products that came out from Elgato, and we'll kind of talk about that and Pete's video on how that went, and my own questions for those products, as well as some other cool apps and viewer questions this week for streaming. So lots to talk about this week. I'm pretty excited. But Pete, how's it going, man? How you doing today?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. Another busy week. Obviously, last week I alluded to the fact that I had a video in the works, and I think I lost my voice like several times on the last podcast because I recorded like the whole A-roll take in the morning before the podcast. So now that it's out, we can talk about it, and we're gonna cover that a little bit more later in the video for those listening. After the fact, it was the Elgato Wave panels, so sort of acoustic panels that you can put up on your wall to hopefully improve your sound. So yeah, the video's done really well, but we can dive into that. I'd love to hear some questions from you, because I got a lot of questions in the comments as well. So it'd be good to be able to, you know, answer some of the more common questions that maybe I didn't cover initially in the video. But yeah, loads of news to go through. I think personally, probably I always want to go with the most talked about topic at the start of each week, because I feel like that's going to get our voices warmed up and really talking. I feel like the Twitch adding another option for why you chose to cancel a subscription. So let's go through like actually what the news is. So Twitch have added an option to refund a subscription after you've chosen to subscribe to somebody. And if you do that within 10 minutes, then you can get a refund. And that has always existed, or it's at least existed for like the past year. But what they've added is a new option there as to why you're choosing to refund the subscription. And that can be that you just wanted a shout out. So the option literally says, I just wanted a shout out and now I want a refund for my subscription. So, you know, rightfully so, this has caused a lot of outrage on Twitter. You know, people think that this is Twitch giving trolls the ability to subscribe to somebody and then get a refund within 10 minutes, and you know, their shout out of the subscription still goes up on the stream, and it's going to be awful for streamers and things like that. But I mean, I do want to clarify that this has existed for a long time. It's really just Twitch adding the option to be able to then collect the data on how many people are doing this and maybe then restricting those accounts. So yeah, let's dive into this a little bit. What did you think when you first saw this, Ben?
Yeah, this to me is super interesting, because I don't know, the fact, like you said, this has always been a possibility apparently on Twitch. I'm sure they get tons of tickets like this from people who say, you know, either from kids who use their mom's cards or something, or situations that didn't mean to do something, and there was a subscription that didn't mean to put through. But I think adding a specific reason on the refund for refunding because you only wanted a shout out is very strange, because I think that's a reason that a lot of people do this. And so the thought now is, of course, people will start doing this and then cancel it right away because they just want the shout out. I think there's a fair chunk of people who do this, especially on bigger streams, just because they want their name on there or some shout out. So adding it as a valid reason to cancel your subscription could lead to a lot of people doing this and then immediately canceling it. And so it's kind of like the whole situation with refunding donations and that sort of thing, where that might help a lot and that could be a problem. And I haven't seen people have this happen yet, because I just found this scrolling through Twitter, but it seems like that's the main concern from streamers. And I totally get that if that were to start happening. I do get the other side too, for where you're saying this has already been a thing people could do in terms of refunding by emailing Twitch and going through the support method. But I think it's just easier to do this now, and so the thought is that'll happen more in that case. So I'm not a huge fan of adding it on there. Maybe this should like more education around, you know, by subscribing, you can't refund, and make sure you know what you're doing before you click subscribe kind of thing. Because this, especially for kids, I think, who see this as an option, could be a big reason to have a lot of refunds. So not super impressed at first, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually tested this morning. So I messaged a friend before doing it, obviously. Didn't want to actually harm their stream, but then subscribed or resubscribed to their channel and then immediately went through the refund options and clicked this option. And what was quite interesting for me is I still had access to emotes for like the rest of my test. I only tested for like 15 minutes before I wrote it in. I'm not sure if that's a bug or if that is literally what's happening, because then, I mean, if you do still have access to emotes and it still looks like you're a subscriber to them on Twitch, then people are going to abuse this. Let me tell you that right now.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping that that is a bug and Twitch will fix that. Like you said, I think people are probably blowing this a little bit out of proportion. I don't think it's going to be as bad as people are making out, but there certainly will be a group of users who look to abuse this. And from Twitch's point of view, they're going to be able to then gather that data. So they're going to be able to see the accounts that are abusing this and then maybe stop them from subscribing to channels, because they know that they're just going to try and refund it and again in a few minutes. Then people will say, well, you could just make a new Twitch account, but I would imagine it has to be linked. Well, it does have to be linked to a payment account for you to be able to subscribe. So then people are saying, oh, you could make a new PayPal. But then you're getting to the point where that's quite a lot of effort just to subscribe and unsubscribe to somebody. And it's not the same as like when you donate to somebody through PayPal and then do a chargeback request where the fee will then have to be paid by the streamer. That really is a negative impact for streamers. This, you're not seeing the money, right? So Twitch will eventually pay you your payout at the end of the month, but it's not like you're having to incur any fee as a streamer for this. It's just quite annoying if people are abusing it, especially if you're giving people shout outs on stream, like so many people do when they subscribe. You know, thanks for the subscription, reading out their name, reading out their message, only for them to then, you know, cancel that subscription and get their money back because it was all within 10 minutes. So yeah, it's really interesting. I think one thing I would love to see is if Twitch will try and combat this, if it does get abused, will Twitch try and combat this by delaying the notification that somebody has subscribed to you by 10 minutes, just to prevent people from trolling the system. And obviously they would also have to delay the notification that gets sent out to your alert provider, so Streamlabs or Stream Elements or any of the other services, as to whether or not they have subscribed, because you don't want the subscription coming up on your stream. So obviously you need to delay both what Twitch puts into Twitch chat, but also mm-hmm. what Twitch sends, or rather what Streamlabs and Stream Elements request from the API when somebody subscribes to you. So I think that could be a likely option. But really, my point of view is Twitch is trying to gather the data here of how many people are cancelling subscriptions for this reason, because it was already possible, but you probably had to go through a support ticket to do it. Now they can gather that data and hopefully improve the feature, exactly like you said, by maybe giving some more education when you actually click the subscribe button. You know, this is not refundable, those kind of things. They're probably just trying to reduce the number of support tickets that they get for people wanting to cancel subscriptions because they just wanted a shout out or any other bogus reason of, you know, oh, it was my 6-year-old brother who has access to my credit card or something like that, you know. So I do agree that a lot of fuss has been made about this, and rightly so, and it's good to have a conversation around it. But I think probably the reasons why Twitch have put the option in are eventually going to be beneficial for streamers, because it's all about getting the data and then hopefully improving the feature around that to make sure that it doesn't impact streamers so much.
Yeah, I think there's also the benefit to the Twitch side. I'm guessing this is probably added because it takes a lot of the load off of their support staff to address this kind of thing instead of working on like server issues or site issues, because this is more of just a, you know, a personal customer service thing. And so this probably makes it a lot easier to take care of that kind of thing if it is happening a lot. So I think that's probably why it's here. But again, I think, like you said, there has to be education for both viewers and streamers. I think viewers especially, of knowing like when you do this, here's what you're signing up for, and you shouldn't really be refunding because people gave you a shout out and you got that. And like you said, it feels really bad if you're the streamer who does the shout out and then they refund because you just wanted a shout out, but you gave it to them, but they're still refunding. So hopefully that doesn't happen too much. And that's why I think there has to be some education on the streamer side too, of like what Twitch is going to do to make sure this doesn't get abused and that there's some sort of protocols in place so that there's protection for the streamer. Like you said, you're not taking that fee as a streamer the same way you are with a PayPal type of thing, but it still can make you kind of skeptical. Like as a streamer right now, if you get a big donation, I think because of all the horror stories of chargebacks and things, everyone's kind of scared if you get some big donation of, is that real? Like, is it going to get refunded? If it refunded, am I getting this big fee? So it could be a similar thing if this gets abused where you get a subscription or like, I don't know, 20 gifted subscriptions and they all get refunded or something. So you're kind of skeptical as to whether that's going to stick. hopefully that won't be the case and Twitch will get ahead of that, but I could see where that would be a potential cause of worry in the future. So
yeah, one last point I'd like to make on this is it would be really useful, I think, if Twitch allowed streamers to access this data along with the data of why people stop subscribing to your stream. So if somebody's like a traditional subscriber and then they choose after 6 months to stop supporting your stream, they get a few options, like a kind of like a very, very small survey from Twitch as to like, what, why are you canceling your subscription? You know, are you not interested in the streamer anymore? Or, you know, is it too expensive? I can't actually remember what the options are, but they do collect, a set of responses as to why someone stops supporting you. It would be really useful if the streamer could see those responses. They don't need to be linked to a certain account, but it would be useful to be able to see, oh, people don't like that I am now, I don't know, playing a new game or whatever some of the options are. Because I remember back on my days on Patreon, when I first went full-time with this YouTube channel, you could see that. So when people stop supporting you on Patreon, they could choose a few options or they could write a little comment as to why they're stopping to support you. And it was really useful as the creator to be able to see, it's because I'm not uploading enough content, or because the content no longer felt relevant, or, you know, maybe it was just a financial thing and you know, no hard feelings at all. So I would love to see Twitch allow the streamers to get some kind of level to the access of, or access to this level of data, because that would hopefully help them improve their streams. Not to the point where you can identify who has unsubbed and what the reason was, so you can go and harass them. Oh, why are you supporting someone else? No, just purely so that you can help improve your stream. But hopefully this is the route that Twitch is going down with this whole collecting more data about why people are requesting refunds, and hopefully also whilst they're cancelling subscriptions. So we've probably covered that, I think, in enough detail. So why don't we move on to, I guess, the Twitch viewership records that you saw this week.
Yeah, so this comes from Solinome, who is a data site that collects data on Twitch streamers, one of my favorite sites out there. They put out a tweet this week talking about how big the viewership has been for 2021 compared to last year. I think especially in Q1 compared to last year. If you look at the chart of viewership for Twitch, I mean, looking at last year, right, it spikes dramatically around April or March. Like, it almost doubles in viewership around that time because of COVID and everything else happening in quarantine. And it stays more or less steady throughout the rest of 2020 and into this year. So if you think about this time this year compared to last year, it was kind of still, you know, COVID was there, but not really kind of at the world level it is. And quarantine hadn't really hit for most people. So I think it makes sense that we're at about double the viewership this year as the same time last year. But to me, it's still surprising that we're holding pretty strong. And I think it's actually at a peak now compared to the last year or so, even with everything happening with COVID and quarantine. He put out the tweet that said, the top 10 most watched weeks ever on Twitch have been the past 10, which is crazy to me. So we are in the series of top 10 most ever watched weeks on Twitch, which is pretty nuts. And also of the top 50 most watched days, 45 are this year, even though we're only 3 months in, which is also very crazy. So to me, it's cool that, you know, we talk about there's the purple screen of death and there's this subscription issue and whatever. There's so many potential problems with Twitch, but despite all of that, they're still breaking records. And this is apparently the most people have ever had watching Twitch. So they're still doing very well. And it's good for both viewers and streamers in that way. So I thought that was super cool. Pete, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing I pulled out from this graph is that it has the data from 2018, 2019, 2020, and the first 3 months of 2021, where we are right now. 2018, 2019, 2020, there is differences, with 2020 being the biggest, but they're all grouped around 20,000 to 35,000 daily hours watched. This year, 2021, like you said, it's almost double. It's at 70,000 total daily hours watched. That's right. I'm just making sure I'm getting that right. So if you just look at the first 3 months of the last 4 years, we're way, way up on Twitch than we have ever been, over double. But like you said, this impact was from last year when we saw March to April. It sort of went from that 35,000 up to 65,000. But we're surpassing that already with Twitch this year, and we're holding like a whole new line. So Twitch has had the most unbelievable growth through the pandemic. And you know, if you had asked me what I thought the stats would look like, I would have thought that March, April, May last year, when so many people were having to quarantine and probably not working from home, I thought that would have been the biggest time. Whereas now, most people who have, I guess, managed to be able to keep their job and work from home will be working from home. So I would have thought there'd be less people watching Twitch, but we're beating that time in the first 3 months this year. So honestly, credit to Twitch. They've obviously massively benefited from the pandemic, but I think the most surprising thing from my point of view is they've managed to sustain it. And I know that we're still in the pandemic, but things are starting to look up now with the vaccines rolling up so much. So yeah, it's really impressive. I kind of expect to see this line sort of straightening out throughout the whole rest of the year at this 70 million daily hours watched. But it's just such a big difference to the last 3 years, isn't it? It's crazy difference in growth.
It just dwarfs the last years in terms of viewership, which is crazy. And like you said, I think I would have guessed that, you know, March to April timeframe is when it would have been highest last year, just due to quarantine. And that's when everyone kind of came online to watch stuff. And you do see it gradually taper down a little bit into about August last year. Not very much, though. But then it ramps back up through August to December. I think that's historically pretty true. It seems like in December, there's a lot of people watching Twitch, especially around the holidays. And then it tends to fall off again, I think, after December. But we're not seeing that this year. It's higher than ever in January to the March timeframe. So I'm pretty curious to see the rest of 2021, if it continues to hold there, if it grows, or maybe it goes back down. Because I mean, the levels are just crazy. So I hope it holds, but it's, I don't know. It depends on what Twitch does, and hopefully they can bring in more non-gaming categories. I think that's a big piece of it. And we saw there's already a ton of initiative from Twitch to come, you know, get basketball and fighting and other areas on the Twitch this year. So I think that could be a big way to break that further and keep pushing that on the rise, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll definitely share a link to this tweet in the description for the podcast notes, or if you're listening on a podcast app, you can get the sort of description there as well. Sully Gnome is definitely a Twitter account worth following, because they share stats from their site. So Sully Gnome on its own is probably the best like statistics website if you want to see Twitch statistics, or like what streamers are streaming, how many hours, how many viewers, all those kind of things. But I love it when they break down like the insights from all this data that they collect into just a graph that you can kind of look at and be like, oh my God, which is my reaction when I looked at this. So definitely give them a follow. And we'll probably be continuing talking about their tweets and their data for the foreseeable future. What do you want to dive into next, Ben?
I think in the vein of more analytics and data, we can talk about the YouTube piece really quick. And I think especially getting your side on this would be cool. But YouTube essentially added a new stat in the studio side where you can see your new versus returning viewers, which is pretty cool. And you have a snippet here of, I think, is that all your videos or just one of your videos? I guess it's all of them that you're showing here.
Yeah, so I shared a screenshot of this with Ben, so what it looks like actually on my dashboard. So effectively what they're building in is another graph option that you can look at in YouTube Studio, where you can see how many viewers on your channel are watching videos, and they're new viewers that have never seen your content before versus returning viewers. And returning viewers doesn't necessarily mean subscribed. It just means that they have watched your content before. So I don't know if that just means they've watched 1 second of your content before, or if it means that, you know, they've watched three videos. I don't know quite what YouTube is categorizing a returning viewer as. But anyway, they show two different lines, for one for new viewers and one for returning viewers. So you can see basically like what your audience is. You might see that this video has done particularly well, but you don't know how many of those viewers were from your subscription feed or returning viewers versus new viewers. So interestingly, with my graph that I've shared with Ben, we can see that basically new viewers are the majority of my viewers from day to day. And the only change to that is when I upload a video, where you see like a little mountaintop where the returning viewers overtake the new viewers. So when I upload a video, usually the day that I upload that video, more viewers will be from returning viewers. Am I making sense here? I hope I am. I'm trying to describe it.
Looking at this chart, you have a pretty steady stream of people who are new, who are discovering your videos each day, and it's holding pretty solid. And then on the returning viewer side, it's lower, but then it spikes pretty hard every time you release a new video, which makes sense, right? Because your subscribers are going back to watch the new stuff that's out, and then they've probably seen the rest of it, so they're not watching as much otherwise. But it's pretty cool just to see the difference between, like, you have that very steady stream, like I said, of new people watching your stuff that's just consistently pulling in new viewers, But then the returning people do come back each time. So I think it's also cool to see like how many come back for each video and then like what the trends are essentially between your new videos. So any more data like that was pretty cool. And you can see things like unique viewers too, of how many total people are watching. So not only just the view count, but total number of people watching your stuff, which could be helpful if you can kind of determine people watching stuff multiple times maybe, or they're coming back consistently to watch a certain video if you have maybe like a viral video kind of thing. So I think this is really good data to have for people who make YouTube videos just to get more info on your stuff.
Yeah, YouTube analytics, I think, has always been like a scary amount of information that you can dive into. And this whole revamp of Studio that they've done over the past year, probably 18 months now, has been really focused in making that data easier to digest as the content creator. And they've done a really good job. Like, you can really easily now see at a glance, you know, how your latest video is doing, what the click-through rate is, what the audience retention is on that video, you know, maybe highlighting certain points in the video where people tend to close or choose a different video, you know, where viewers are coming from, all these amazing statistics that you can get completely lost in, but it's worth, especially like new features like this, it's worth diving into and seeing surprising things. Like, I would have thought the majority of my viewers day to day were from subscribers, but when you think about it a little bit more, it does make more sense that new videos spike with current subscribers and returning viewers, and then the rest of the baseline views is the majority new people that are probably searching how to do something and finding my videos through that, rather than a returning viewer, you know, going back to a video that they've already watched or like something that's maybe historic and a bit out of date. So it does make sense, but it was interesting, and I thought it's a cool feature. YouTube seemed really dedicated into building like analytics, and that's kind of probably why I harped on so much in the previous segment about why I'd love Twitch to share some of that data of when people unsubscribe from your stream, because it's useful to have that data as a content creator. You can always make changes to your content based on the analysis of the data that you take.
Yeah, I think that could be pretty cool on the Twitch side too, is just knowing why people are leaving. And like you said, YouTube is super in depth. And I think Twitch has been getting better on some of their analytics, but there's still some room there for maybe why people leave or how to incentivize people. I know Twitch is their own entire site-wide issues for people leaving streams, but could still be useful there. Do you want to kind of transition this into your YouTube video, actually, speaking of YouTube, because I think we can talk about that. So do you want to quickly talk about the video for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, just to quickly summarize it?
Yeah, so this week, what was it? When did the video go out? I think Thursday. Yeah, Thursday, Elgato released 3 new products. None of them like huge, you know, like when they released their Wave microphones, that was like, whoa, Elgato's now getting into the audio world. I would say none of them are that huge, but kind of together, they are interesting enough to talk about. So the 3 products are acoustic panels, which they're calling Wave panels. Wave obviously being the name of their microphone. So obviously the audio line is taking this Wave name. These are like hexagonal panels that you can put on your walls to reduce the reverberation of your room. And that's why, and they look cool. Yeah, they look wavy. And that's what I did the video on. Lots of tests. They also released some RGB light strips that can be controlled from Stream Deck or your phone, and a green screen mouse mat, which was actually like an April Fool's joke that they tweeted 2 years ago or something, and enough people were like, wait, that's actually a good idea, because they want top-down cameras to show their mouse movement or to show, you know, Pokemon cards or anything like that. They actually released this as a final product, the green screen mouse mat. So yeah, my video just covered the Wave panels, because I actually thought that was the most useful for content creators to actually improve the production of their stream, whereas like RGB strips and a green mouse mat, maybe not so relevant, even though I did get sent those as well. So yeah, I put together a video kind of reviewing Wave panels and comparing them to the 2 other products in the audio panel market that I bought before, which are the cheap Amazon foam pyramids that you see everywhere, or you certainly did see everywhere like 2 years ago. I've had them, I've owned them before. I re-bought them to test in this video and compare. And then some super expensive panels that I got from a company called GIK Acoustics, which I paid for myself, which I've installed in my new studio because the Wave panels weren't out then. So I kind of had like either end of the spectrum to compare against, these cheap panels from Amazon that are like $30, the Wave panels, which come in a box of 6 for $100, and then my super expensive ones, which are like $500 for 6. And then did some audio tests around them, talked about how they mount to the wall, some of the pros and cons and things like that. So I did put a lot of work into the video. It's done really well, which is obviously a nice thing. But yeah, what did you think, Ben? And what questions did you have about the products, any of them?
Yeah, first of all, great job on the video, Pete. Very impressed, very impressed.
Thanks. You can come back next week on the podcast. Good answer.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me. I'll try to be good. I think the sound panels are pretty cool. I didn't expect Elgato to do that. I think most people were kind of surprised by that line, but there's more audio coming. I think in terms of my questions for it, first of all, you did a really in-depth video, so I don't have too many questions on the sound panels. I think the only thing would be like, who do you think needs the sound panels? Like, what kind of streamer is it? Like the entry-level person, the person like who's pretty experienced? Like, who do you think that fits the best?
Yeah, I mean, because it is a premium product. Like, I understand that $100 is, you know, it's a similar price to like the entry-level Stream Deck. I think that's like $130 to $150. So it's certainly not a cheap purchase. And I think the biggest takeaway actually from my video was that a good microphone close to your mouth makes a huge difference, because I did like audio tests from the camera's microphone, which it was really evident when you were using no panels, cheap panels, medium panels and expensive panels. And then I also did one with I didn't actually use the Shure SM7B because it's quite a quiet microphone, so the differences wouldn't have been so obvious, but I used a Rode NC1, which is a condenser microphone, but I still had it close to my mouth and the difference was much more subtle. Unless you're wearing headphones, you might not have even been able to hear that much difference. So that was the biggest takeaway, is actually, even if you have a horrible sounding room with loads of reverberation, you can make a big difference just by getting a good mic and having it close to your mouth. Something that we harp on about many times in this podcast and on many videos.
Yeah, I think like my question related to that is, do you feel like, to me with this kind of microphone here, I feel like the sound panels are almost negligible. You can't really hear the difference of them for most people unless you have some crazy, like your room is just solid walls and nothing else maybe. But maybe for like the YouTube side more, if using a shotgun mic, then the sound panels make a big difference. Is that kind of like why you got sound panels, for instance?
The reason I actually, when I got moved into the studio and got sound panels, was it because it was really reverberatory when I moved in. And obviously I hadn't moved in any of the furniture, and that actually makes a massive difference as soon as you put, you know, like this big cabinet in here, even my lights, my desk, like that does make a difference. And it's got a nice thick carpet, which helps as well. But overall, I just wanted to improve the production quality of my videos. And in my last place, I ended up taking down the cheap panels because I hated the look of them so much and I didn't feel like they made enough of a difference. And then when I came to editing every single video that I recorded in there, I'd just be like, oh my God, the amount of reverb in this room. And it's one of those things that the more trained you become to hearing it, the worse it sounds. Some people might even like the sound of reverb, you know, like I'm sure there's plenty of big streamers that don't do anything to their walls and have quite a poor sounding room in terms of the actual noise and reflections, but people don't care because at the end of the day you're watching a compressed stream over the internet, probably on a phone with phone speakers, and you can't hear the difference. So yeah, it's certainly not a requirement product. Like, in no way do I want to recommend that people go out and need to buy acoustic treatment for their room, but I think for people that struggle with lots of reverberation, or they maybe have a condenser microphone, they don't want to have their microphone shown in their webcam frame, or like you said, YouTubers that want to be definitely having a microphone off screen, because on Twitch it's so common to have a microphone quite close to your mouth now. I feel like it's almost become the standard that you can absolutely get away with it. And like you said, in your room now you can see that there's plenty of things being hung on the wall, which is gonna like diffuse the sound waves and make sure that they're not reflecting back off a completely hard surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in general for the sound panels, I just get the sense that maybe it's more useful for the YouTube side or even the podcast side, where audio is super important, versus the streaming side for most people, because you're usually so close to the mic. So just my initial impressions. I think also there was the LEDs and the mouse pad, which you got access to both of those as well, correct? So on the LEDs, these to me feel like the biggest loss of the three. I don't know, like, what are your initial impressions? Because to me, I have these two LED strips back here. They cost me $5 to get. Like, both of them combined was $5. And so these Elgato LEDs are, I think, $60 a pack, US dollars. So to me, I just can't see the value unless, like, you really have flicker problems in the LEDs just to get these, or you're really picky about RGB, you being uniform on everything that you do and you want to customize it. I'm not that guy, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on the strip?
Yeah, so I think the majority of people, when they're looking at new Elgato products, they like to find the super cheap alternative and be like, $100 for wave panels. You can get this phone for $30 on Amazon. And that's precisely why I include the cheap Amazon in my video, because I was like, you know, people are going to complain about this, so I might as well include it, and then people can hear for themselves what's the best solution. The LED strips is really obvious. Like, you can get really cheap strips from Amazon or AliExpress, or even in like supermarkets now, people are selling cheap LED strips. And it's really obvious the difference between like a $60 pack and a $5 pack. Like, why would I spend $60 when I can go, like you said, and get it for $5? I think the differences here are more minimal. I came again from the more expensive side and bought Philips Hue light strips for my place, and like Philips Hue RGB lights, which are more pricey than Elgato's, believe it or not. Because at the time, the cheap strips that I had bought, and I probably bought two or three for my setups, I did have flicker problems with cameras. And I use a variety of different cameras in this place. Like, the main camera I use for a lot of my A-roll is Canon. This camera that I'm using now is Sony. And even if you set like the same shutter speeds and apertures and things like that, you can have flicker problems with different RGB strips. Like, a lot of the lights that I put into this cabinet, this is the third set that I put in because they were having flicker problems, and I was just begging for Philips to make them because Philips seemed to make flicker-free lights. So it is a big selling point, I think, for Elgato lights, because I definitely did go through a few sets that caused flicker issues. But the rest of the features, it's just nice to have, isn't it? Like, being able to control it from your Stream Deck, like, absolutely not worth $55 extra. And being able to like dial in the exact one of 6 million different colors that you want, rather than having, you know, a remote like quite a lot of the cheaper strips have of 12 colors or 16 colors you can choose from. So yes, you do get finer control and more convenience, but whether that's worth the extra money, probably not for a majority of users. I have just put one strip up, but they actually sent me three, so I'm wondering what to do with the others. But they definitely are better for me than the Philips Hue ones, which were more expensive. But I realize I'm definitely in the minority in spending like however much it was probably like $100 for the Philips Hue light strip back in the day. So yeah, they're a weird one. I think I agree with you that they're probably the one that I would recommend the least. Like, the green screen mouse pad, actually, I think it's $30 or $25 or something like that. I'd have to get used to check because you're based in America, but certainly in the UK, I think it was £25, and you can't really buy them. You probably can now buy them, like some cheap knockoffs, but it's a good quality mouse pad, nice and big. And, you know, if you kept it clean and didn't eat your lunch at your desk like I sometimes do, you could definitely use it for unboxings and things like that, and key out that green color so that it looks a bit more more included into the rest of your stream aesthetic.
Yeah, I think that was the one I'm most excited for, honestly, is the green screen, which apparently was an April Fool's, like you said, but is actually the coolest thing that came out, in my opinion. I haven't seen people use this yet, and it was a little weird to see them demo it where you're keying out your mouse pad and it's just like you're floating hands with your mouse and keyboard. So I'm curious to see this in action on somebody's stream, but conceptually I think it's the coolest because it gives you options to do things like you said with unboxings and cards. Did you test like trying it out at all?
Yeah, I did a really quick test of like just mouse movement and keying out. It keyed pretty well just using the normal standard keying technique in OBS Studio, one of the filters, exactly like you would use with a traditional green screen behind a person. Because I remember actually after I released the video, I did like a quick Instagram Q&A about the other products because there was people that had interesting questions about them. And I remember your question asking about how easy is it to key out and how easy is it to light? Are you going to need an overhead light pointing directly down? I would say that if you have the option of that, you're going to get the best results. Particularly something like the Ring Light from Elgato, which has a phone mount inside. I can imagine mounting that up on my desk, putting it across horizontally so it's aiming down, got a nice big ring light with a phone mount inside, and then using Epoch Cam to actually, you know, have a second webcam of a mouse down. I mean, I'm not the use case for this, but if somebody like Shroud wanted to have his mouse movement, which people love to see, like how he flicks around and gets these snap headshots, that would probably look really cool on his stream if it was green screened in. Or like we said, Pokemon's such a big thing now, like people unboxing cards and things like that. The top-down cameras are becoming, you know, much more required in those kind of setups. So yeah, I didn't actually have any issues keying it out, but you obviously are going to have some shadows. The advantage is your hand is so close to the material that the shadow is reduced because it's, you know, it's right top down above your hand. So hopefully the angles mean that you're not going to have huge shadows to deal with. But yeah, it's a really good color. Like the green is really easy to key. So interesting product. Like I said, they're all interesting, but they're not big enough really to be like making a massive deal about. But together they're kind of interesting. And it just shows again, like Elgato's thinking outside the box of what creators need. LED strips, probably, I don't think creators really need, but like acoustic foam, that's something that sucked for a long time, and they've come in with a viable solution. It might be more expensive than a lot of people want, but really you're actually getting a much better product than the cheap Amazon panels, which hopefully I showed on my YouTube video. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think they're just adding to their whole overall portfolio, right? Because now you can do everything from lighting to soundproofing to video options and Stream Decks, and I'm sure we'll see just expansion like that to cover every range of whatever you might need as a creator, so that you can kind of bundle things together and be some cool options for just giving you options. Like if you want to green screen something or have some cool LED strip with chat controls maybe or something in the future. So I think it's pretty cool seeing them do all that together. But I think we can probably move on to, we have a couple options. Do you want to talk about maybe the StreamLadder piece really quick that we found?
Yeah, sure. This is something I actually found again through the Twitch subreddit, which is worth subscribing to if you, you know, don't want to see people complaining about Xerifia streamers every single day. But every so often there is a genuine good topic that gets upvoted. This is really cool because I actually tested it out before we started recording this podcast. So this is a website called StreamLadder, which is streamladder.com. And effectively what you can do is turn Twitch clips, which are obviously 16:9 aspect ratio, because that's what you stream to Twitch, turning them into portrait videos, particularly for TikTok, where you can, it's really cool. You give it the Twitch URL and then you tell, it gives you like a frame from your video, and you then use a little crop box to choose exactly where your webcam is in that frame. And you can choose between 16:9 or 4:3 webcam. And then you get a second box for where you want to highlight the gameplay. And then it sort of takes the webcam, puts it on top of your video gameplay. So it's a nice like vertical video. I'm not doing a great job of explaining this, but if you can imagine your camera and then your gameplay directly below, nicely put together into a video, it effectively allows you to do that really easily from a Twitch clip. And then you can share those highlights to TikTok or to Instagram. I can't remember what Instagram one's called, Reels, I think they're called. You know, pretty much every platform now has this like vertical video format that you can share. So I don't want to like DDoS this site by sending it so much traffic by talking about it on a main video right now, because it is free, and he's clearly doing like some video rendering on a server, so it would probably be quite expensive for him to run, but really cool what right now whilst it is free. So definitely go and check it out and try it out with one of your Twitch clips. It's called streamladder.com. again, we'll leave it in the show notes and in the description. But did you get a chance to play? What did you think?
Yeah, I tried this out this morning and it's actually super cool. It's basically just go to the site, plug in your clip Twitch or Twitch clip, select your, like you said, your webcam and just the middle part of your video, which is usually the focus area of whatever's happening. And then just easy as that, it just creates this clip of this perfectly sized, whether it's a TikTok video or an Instagram story, YouTube clip, whatever you want it to be. It just creates like that, which is super nice because it's been pretty historically annoying to create that kind of size video. You have to go into usually your video editing software and create a custom size and then add your video and add your cam. And so I think just having this quick way to do it is super nice. It's not like the most fancy way to do it. There's no, you know, intro, outro options or whatever, but it's really quick. And I think if you want to get like consistent videos out on TikTok or YouTube or any other platform, then it's hard to beat this. I think I even might try it potentially because it's so easy. And I think I am not on TikTok. That's the only thing. If I have this option, maybe I'll start using TikTok, because I'm not someone to go dancing, but I can post a Twitch clip if it's this easy and just cross post it.
I'm the same as you. I've just knocked my whole desk and shaken my camera. I haven't used TikTok other than, you know, like browsed a little bit on the website, but I don't have an account on it. And it, to me, and this might be the boomer in me, being like, oh, it's just another platform that the kids are using, like Snapchat, and I don't need to worry about it because it's not going to be real for content creators. But I've seen like plenty of people using it now and talking about how amazing the growth is. And I'm like, am I an idiot for not like at least putting some content up on this platform and like slowly building an audience there? Because especially using something like StreamLadder, it would be super easy to create, you know, Twitch clips, but on TikTok, and then try and grow an audience there. And obviously you need to create better content than just having Twitch clips, but this is a super easy way to turn one content format into another, without having to, you know, download the video, like you said, crop it and move your webcam around. It's just super simple. So yeah, what are your thoughts on TikTok as a platform? We could probably dedicate a whole podcast to this, I think, but I just wanted to...
I love talking about this stuff. I mean, I think TikTok is probably, it's definitely the point now where it's not a question anymore. TikTok is pretty established at this point. I think especially after all the controversy around it getting banned and whether it was going to be even existing last year, and then it got bought out, I forget by who, but basically like that whole redemption arc kind of solidified it, I think. And I have heard a lot of stories, people who have grown on TikTok to move that to Twitch or just on TikTok in general, and it influences every other platform. So I think you can't really ignore it at this point. And it is still the newest of any platform, I would say. So you're not alone. I really haven't used it at all. My wife has dipped around a little bit in it, but it definitely consumes a lot of attention. And I don't think, like, I remember even 2 or 3 years ago, we were starting this question of like, is TikTok the next platform? Is TikTok going to be the thing? And I think we're kind of past that now because it's been around for so long. So I might try it too, especially like you said, if there is this option, just add easy Twitch clips. Like you said, it's not the most fancy and there's probably a better way to do it, but I'm a big believer that it's better to do like some content than no content and then eventually work towards being better. So I think if you haven't tried TikTok and you want to try this, then Streamlabs is like a perfect way to start just throwing stuff out there and see kind of what the reception is. And then if you decide you like it, then you can get more fancy with it and add intros and more editing and that kind of thing. So I think it's a platform here to stay, but I don't know, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we could definitely spend a whole video talking about it. Maybe we just leave it up to our audience. If any of you listening or watching this are using TikTok, let us know in the comments. Are we missing out? You know, are we boomers for thinking it might be a platform that we can avoid using? Because I don't want to have like 5 platforms that I have to think about putting content out to every single week. You know, I've already got YouTube, which is main focus, Twitter, where I try and share like opinions about stuff that's going on in the Twitch industry and things like from this podcast. And then Instagram, which is a bit more like behind the scenes, what I'm doing, when a new video is coming out, what I'm filming, writing a script, like what I'm doing day to day to run a YouTube channel. Those 3 I feel like are enough for me. If I added a 4th, I would feel like maybe that's going to cause some kind of burnout and one of the other platforms is going to suffer.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think I would do like a very minimal amount of effort on other platforms, because you have your core focus platforms where you put a lot of work in, right? So I think that makes sense. But like for me, I have a second YouTube channel that I just kind of put gameplay on, and I don't edit it or anything. I just literally take the Twitch clip and just pump it to YouTube just to see what happens. I don't, you know, if people want to watch that, if so, I'm just kind of stoking the fire in case that becomes an option. So with this, I think you could also just take that same Twitch clip, and there's so many platforms you can add vertical video now that you could just pump it everywhere out on like a secondary account and see what happens. That could be TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I'm sure there are more I'm forgetting, but it's all the same format. So I see on YouTube even a lot of people doing that with just rip TikToks essentially and put them onto vertical YouTube video, and it does just as well. So I mean, why not just try it with your own content if you have time to kill, and just don't put a ton of work into it, but see what happens. And if it gets popular, then you can kind of add that maybe to your options there. That's my thought on it.
Yeah. Let's save it for another week where we can really dive into it, because this podcast is already 40 minutes long and we've got a few pieces left to cover. So let's quickly cover the news of Epic Games buying the company Mediatonic, who are the developers behind Fall Guys. So any quick thoughts on this? Obviously, Fall Guys was a game that blew up last year. So kind of interesting, I think, for Epic Games to purchase it now when the player base is definitely smaller, but it's still substantial.
Yeah, I think Fall Guys, it's interesting to see Epic Games picking up a couple of different studios like this. They got Rocket League recently and now Fall Guys as well. And they all kind of fit that same aesthetic, I would say, with that Fortnite kind of very accessible, very fun game. So maybe they're going for that theme. But just picking up these other studios to add to their total overall studio makes sense, because they're really focused on the Epic Games Store and just offering more options beyond even their own titles now. So I think it's a good pickup, because Fall Guys could easily come back if they add more seasons or some other big push, especially, I think because Fall Guys was super organic last time, whereas, you know, Epic Games has the budget to really push more Fall Guys with paid advertising and things like that too. So maybe we'll see a resurgence. Overall, I think it's a good pickup. I don't know. Thoughts on your side?
Yeah, I mean, I still play it from time to time. It's the perfect game for detilting in League of Legends ranks. Like, we played Saturday and Sunday. Like, my mates and I played the Clash tournament. And in the Saturday, we like had a bye in the second round. So you basically have an hour where you can't play any League. It won't let you play any other game modes. And we also, you know, had to stay on in the client. So like, it's the perfect game to detail and that, basically you're just having fun with friends. So good purchase, I think, from Epic Games, and kind of they're going down that path, like you said, of continuing with streamer focused games, like games that are entertaining to watch on stream. The other thing quickly is, I guess this is maybe the result of the feature that we talked about last week from Twitch, where you can, well, for certain users now, they're definitely rolling this out slowly. You can hover over thumbnails on Twitch and see a few seconds of the video play, similar to how you can on YouTube. I think we covered this last week, but we didn't actually have like an example to show. We now have like a tweet from Zach Bussey, which shows an example of this happening for him, where he can sort of see from a thumbnail, hover over, see like the last few seconds or the current live feed, whichever it is, of the Twitch stream. But I think we kind of covered that mostly last week. It just looked like it was going to be more of a thumbnail last week, and now it's more actually a video playing on hover. So unless you have any points on that, I think maybe we go straight to the viewer question.
Yeah, let's jump to the viewer question, because like you said, that's not super new, so we'll keep an eye on that. This one is from Keto Cubis Gaming. Did I say that right? Keto Cubis, I think. He said, how would you sort these by importance? Microphone, lighting, camera, overlay, visuals, which I guess visuals includes resolution, bitrate, FPS, so quality, I guess, of the stream. Interesting question. I actually was going to maybe add the sound panels to this list, was my thought of where you'd put those on this list too. So I'll throw it to you first, Pete. What are your thoughts on Keto's question?
Okay, so let's imagine his question is, you have a gaming PC capable of streaming, but you don't have anything else. So you need to get microphone. Well, you don't need to, but your shopping list might include microphone, lighting, camera, overlay, so some kind of aesthetic for your stream. And then, yeah, like the visual quality. So I would first of all, especially take that visuals that he's put, resolution, bitrate, and FPS. I'd put that at the start. I would rather watch a boring stream. Would I rather watch a boring stream with no microphone, but really good visuals? I don't know. I just feel like that's just free. Like, you just, if you have a computer capable of running a stream, even if you don't have a computer capable of streaming in 720p, lower it down to 480p, 30fps, stable bitrate, whatever you can do with your current setup, that's just, you can do that for free if you just put the time in to watch a gaming careers YouTube video about setting up OBS Studio. So I'm going to put that as the most important. But I also feel like that's the least interesting. So microphone, lighting, camera, overlay, and sound panels. Okay, I'm going to put sound panels last. I would probably go microphone most important, then camera. Well, it depends. If you don't have any camera, then there's no point getting lighting, is there?
That's true.
But if you have a bad camera, you can improve that with lighting. So lighting and camera kind of depends with what you already have. If you have like a C920, then I reckon maybe getting some decent lighting would help improve that camera a lot, rather than investing in like an A5100 or something like that. So lighting, camera, depending on going next to each other, depending on what you already have. Overlay versus sound panels. Because you can definitely make your own overlays if you have some kind of skills, but not everyone has like access to Photoshop. So I would probably put overlay and aesthetic next and sound panels last. I definitely think sound panels is the least important out of that big group, especially as we're putting microphone first. And like we said at the beginning of this video, having a good quality microphone nice and close to your mouth can make a massive difference and maybe eradicate the need for having sound panels.
Exactly. I think I have pretty much the same list. Visuals are super important, just to make sure you have a very clean stream that's good to watch. If there's lots of stuttering or lots of just really hard to see anything because the bitrate, then that's not fun. And then the microphone, I think those two are almost at the same level. like, it's so important to have a very clean stream with just the basic video, even just game streaming, and then having your microphone be clear. I think that's like the essence of what a good stream is to start with. And then you add on, like you said, the lighting camera kind of go hand in hand. Like if we assume you have a budget camera of some kind, of the C920, then I would go lighting first instead of buying a better camera. But if you don't have any camera, then lighting is not going to help you, like you said. So get a starter camera. Between overlay and, it's funny, I think overlay is like definitely last right behind sound panels, but overlay I think is actually really not that important for most people. It's kind of like a nice add-on, nice polish to your stream, but definitely not at the essential level of like microphone and visuals. And then if you add the camera, just getting that to look decent, that's the first thing you have to have. And then you can start getting fancy with sound paneling and RGB strips and mouse pads and things like that if you want to add that.
I think it's important to say here that this is super generic, and actually some of the biggest standout streamers have a completely different order. Like you look at streamers like Tyler One, who hasn't got a microphone. He just uses his headset mic, and that's like part of his stream, is he has this like distorty mic that he always screams into. And you know, he has definitely prioritized a good resolution, frame rate, bit rate, like a really stable stream, and probably camera ahead of microphone. And we've put microphone at the top of our list, but there'll also be streams that really concentrate on having amazing overlays and aesthetics and transitions and things like that, that maybe don't have a camera, so they don't need lighting either. You know, it's just a person with a good microphone. So I think it completely depends on what, you know, what streamers you like to emulate and you want to take different parts from. But I would definitely say that the settings, like having a stable stream is in my opinion the most important, because I could never watch a stream that was laggy or dropping frames or, you know, really, really low bit rate of like less than 1,000. It doesn't matter how good your microphone is.
Right. I think across the board, that's the most important. You won't find any big streamer who's not having a pretty clean stream in terms of just watching it back. Maybe you have those Tyler ones with the not perfect microphones or people without cameras, things like that. But I think across the board, it's usually a smooth experience. And that's the quickest thing that'll turn people away, aside from like really, really grating audio, I think. Like even Tyler One is not that bad compared to someone who's using like just the world's worst microphone. That could maybe be worse than having bad resolution, but in general, that's the baseline. So good question from Keto. Thank you for asking that. And hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, I think that probably does it this week, looking at our time. And now we've hit 50 minutes. So when that's added down, it's usually only a couple of minutes out that we cut out of me coughing. So yeah, we've hit a pretty decent sized episode. Lots to talk about, like we've gone through. Hopefully that has been an interesting episode for you guys to listen to or watch. Similar to what Ben just said, thanks Keto for the question. If you want your question answered on next week's pod, be sure to send me or Ben a message on Twitter or Instagram or in the YouTube comments. We'll choose one every week to cover at the end of the episodes. But other than that, I hope you have a great week streaming, Ben, and creating content. I need to work out what video I'm doing this week, but we will see you next Wednesday. Peace.
See you guys.